The Conservatives are the largest party. They don't have an overall majority at this stage. The Prime Minister called this election because she wanted certainty and stability. This doesn't seem to look like certainty and stability.
Welcome to Polling Politics. This week's podcast is sponsored by Ladbrokes Political Betting. Hello and welcome to Polling Politics, the election. I'm Joe Twyman from Delta Poll.
I'm freelance journalist Maruda Combs. Sorry, I was just thinking that when this started...
I was thinking that we do this every week, and yet I still haven't remembered when my cue is.
No, so I got distracted by the fact that in the first few episodes you were like, the election! And now the last one, the election. It's just happening.
I tried to put a bit of emphasis on, but all was left. Anyway, every week during the campaign, Maria and I round up the key political stories and statistics of the week. And we're also joined by a top guest from the world of politics to delve into the polling and public opinion in more detail. But because it's the last episode before the election, we've doubled up. Our guests today are Aisha Hazarika and Bethany Wheatley. Hello, Aisha and Bethany.
Hello.
Hi.
Aisha is a former special advisor to Ed Miliband and Harriet Harman. She now works as journalist, broadcaster, author, and stand-up comedian. Her comedy show State of the Nation was performed at the Edinburgh Fringe in 2017. Bethany is the former digital director of the Conservative Party, and before that, she previously led the digital strategy for Boris Johnson's London mayoral campaign from 2010 to 2012. She now works at Brunswick and is involved with Rory Stewart's campaign to become London mayor. Hello, Aisha and Bethany. I've already said that, haven't I? Let's move on to the next bit. So, I'm so tired.
You can tell it's the last episode before the election.
Aisha and Bethany, how are your elections going?
They feel quite exhausting now. I think everybody is like a husk of a human at this stage. Everybody has like, everyone looks like the scream now. It's just like, make it stop, make it stop.
It's got to the stage where actually any party political views that I might have had, which obviously I don't have because I'm neutral, have gone completely out the window. And I just want a thumping majority for any party. Don't care who it is.
Steady on.
Just want a thumping majority so that it can all end.
I would say, conversely, for me, this has flown by and I feel very well rested, really relaxed, super looking forward to Thursday night, Friday morning, because there's going to be absolute meltdown on Twitter and, you know, I love it. But
well,
yeah.
Fuck you.
Thanks so much for having me.
How's your election going?
Me is going. I feel like I've aged 20 years in the past few weeks and also I long for death and maybe I should just move back to France. Apart from that, I'm all right.
Well, yeah, it's all good.
At least you've got somewhere to go, Marie.
Would you like to come with
yes,
me to
please,
France?
Take me with you.
Well, you'll have the new independent Scotland once,
yes, I'll be
once
like,
the Conservatives fail to
I
get
I don't think the
majority.
SNP will let me in.
I am considering Trump's America, but I'm not sure what's worse,
yeah,
Corbyn's Britain
yeah.
or Trump's America.
Interesting question. We're in the final few days of the campaign now, and it seems like we're starting to get some gaffes emerging. Yesterday, Boris Johnson's handling of the picture of the young boy lying on the ground in a hospital was not dealt with, shall we say, in the most seamless manner. And this morning, the latest revelations of John Ashworth and his conversations being leaked to the press. Will this make any difference to the overall result, do you think?
I don't think that the handling necessarily will make a difference to the result, but the fact that Labour managed to have another day about the NHS is what will make a difference potentially to Tory vote. That's not what they want to be talking about. They obviously want to be talking about Brexit. Hence, you see the sort of story moving on last night with that tweeting of quite an incredible parody of Love Actually with Boris holding the cue cards, which, you know, could potentially be spectacularly miscalculated given the dynamics of the film. But, you know, the attempt to move it on has happened. And, you know, if we're still talking about the NHS tomorrow, then I think, you know, that's again, that's not ideal from a Conservative perspective.
I mean, I think the Boris Johnson thing was sort of bad, but I don't think it was like a fatally kind of wounding gaffe, because everybody, it's not like here's something hugely new. We know that kind of the Tories, you know, the cliche is, you know, the Tories are not best placed with the NHS, so it's not like it's kind of breaking news. I mean, I thought that Love Actually thing was unbelievably awful on so many levels. From a digital point of view, surely it's going to be memed in the sense that, like, basically all the cards are going to be like, I'm a complete liar, and, you know,
oh, it already has been.
Already done. But also, it's so interesting that of all the characters in Love Actually, he basically picks the slightly weird stalker who's trying to steal someone's wife away.
Many years later. You see, I never liked the film. I never liked the film, and every Christmas I argue with my uncle about why it's a dreadful film.
It's a horrendous film.
As time has gone on, we have been proven to be right.
And also, you think there's two characters in there. There's the weird stalker, kind of adulterer, and there's the prime minister that stands up to the president of the United States of America, and he chooses the weird stalker.
But it's also, I would like to say that Rosine Erlin Khan, the Labour MP, did a Love Actually video with the cue cards a few weeks ago, which was very good. And I think partly as well, because she's a woman, I think it did make it considerably less creepy. And it was actually quite well done and quite funny. So it's a bit like, and I think she tweeted about it as well, being like, oh, you did my thing, but less well, and 3 weeks later,
we've done we've done a story in the Evening Sanity. We've put the headline, Theft, Actually.
Nice.
See what you did there.
Well, I would just say, though, this goes back to the Tory party and digital and what they're trying to do, which is to get people talking about what they're doing online. And
so is this shitposting, do you think?
I mean, yes.
You heard it here first, guys. But let's go back to why Love Actually is such a bad film. You see, everyone in it is cast in the wrong role. You've got a great cast there, and they're all playing the wrong person.
I genuinely want to hear this.
Colin Firth should have been playing the Hugh Grant role. Hugh Grant role should have been playing the Colin Firth role.
Yeah.
Liam Neeson should have been playing.
Martin McCutcheon's role.
No, Liam Neeson should have been playing Alan Rickman's role. Alan Rickman should have been playing. Chiwetel Ejiofor and Andrew Lincoln should have swapped.
I can see that.
You know, I mean, you've got so many. And what's with the porn movie with the highest budget ever? I mean, what is that?
I would genuinely listen to you talk about Love Actually for 1 hour.
If my Uncle Anthony is listening, we'll get Marie
but
round.
You are
we should get a live watch along.
If it was only 1 hour that we argue about.
And it's also a celebration of like the worst kinds of men in humanity. It's like the, you know, and Alan Rickman's cast. I mean, Emma Thompson is the best thing about that film. She's so heartbreaking.
Emma Thompson is correctly cast. I will give you that.
But she
that
shouldn't have,
one.
Like, she sort of, oh,
she
I
shouldn't have stayed.
Yeah, she shouldn't have stayed. He's
she
a total shitbag.
Absolutely.
And she shouldn't have stayed.
But also, like, none of the women really have any personality in that movie. Like, they're all just defined by their relationship to the man. And most of the men actually do get to do stuff and say stuff. And the women are kind of just there. It's not a good movie.
How can you have a film where a woman is dealing with the with a violent member of her family, and in the same film have a guy who goes off to some fantasy land in America and has a threesome with Denise Richards? Those two scenes sit so uncomfortably with each other that I think everyone involved should be thoroughly ashamed of themselves.
I still love your analysis of the porn set in terms of high budget production, like high production values.
Well, I mean, you know, as we know, most times nowadays it's just a webcam in a hotel room, but...
Joe, that says more about you than anyone else in terms of what you're... It's fine. Each to their own.
The thing is, I feel like I could try and talk and help, but I'm enjoying you just digging.
I don't think he needs any help.
Yeah. Really. I just had a glimpse into what Joe Toyman likes to peruse on the internet.
As someone who's done an awful lot of research into the relationship between sex and politics, I think we're all familiar with the standard tropes of such output, and it doesn't involve Roman columns such as
ooh,
Mrs. such as the scene your stand-up comedian,
I can
your
send you some websites
the term, Mrs. but some might argue this is not directly related to the election.
They would be wrong.
There was an election.
We'll move on briefly, if you like, from Love Actually. Can you see the final few hours playing out?
I mean, obviously there's going to be loads of stuff online because, you know, you can't can't be in the press, really, on election day. But I suspect there's going to be the typical, you know, every half hour, you'll get all of the, you know, vote now, you know, don't forget to vote. Polls close in this time.
Specially addressed emails. Exactly. Saying, Joe, have you got up and voted yet?
You may even see the return of Comic Sans. Who knows? Oh. It's a crazy time. But it's really difficult to call. There's a lot of stuff that can change the outcome. If it snows, as predicted in parts of the country on Thursday, you know, what's that going to mean? Who knows? I think it will be same as we've seen in the last few elections, where everybody gets a little bit crazy. You don't really get any huge gaffes, but that everyone's just going to sort of be, as Marie said, I wish I was dead. I want this to be over.
I have to say, I think the Jonathan Ashworth gaffe is going to be more wounding to the Labour Party. That is like a real gift to the Tories in these sort of dying hours of this election campaign. They'll be able to, you know, weaponise that to great effect. So I think we'll see a lot of that being pumped out on social media. I think from Labour's point of view, what they'll really want to do is sort of just play to their very, very safe comfort zone. They want to massively stay on the NHS. They'll want to do the kind of risk of the NHS being sold, money for public services. And their major thing is to sort of not have any more huge Jeremy Corbyn dumps, in the sense that he is clearly the weakness of the campaign. And the big thing for Labour is the Get Out the Vote campaign. That is going to be absolutely huge. I mean, I know Labour activists have just been signing up people for the whole day on Thursday with cars so that they can drive people to the polling stations. They're going to have kind of shuttle runs sort of all across the constituencies. That logistical thing is going to be absolutely huge.
It sounds like they're going more American style with the Get Out the Vote efforts this time around. And I think you're right, but that this is going to be huge for both parties. And I think that the Tories as well realize that previously they've not been as strong on sort of that grassroots Get Out the Vote movement. And they're definitely looking to shore that up, particularly in the areas that they want to sort of take off Labour.
But also on that note, I think what's been quite interesting, and I'm not sure that much has been written about it, is actually, again, the Tory kind of ground operation. So obviously it's going to be Get Out the Vote, but even before that, kind of campaigning and door knocking, canvassing, etc. Because I think there was that massive peak in 2015 with Road Trip 2015, organised by Mark Clark, etc., which was the first time, I think, that in recent memory at least, that the Conservatives managed to get, you know, a ton of activists on the ground, knocking on doors, etc. But obviously that went very dark very quickly and became, you know, a terrible, terrible story for the Conservatives for quite a long time. And then 2017, naturally, there was a lot less of that. And the narrative was very much, well, Theresa May has kind of put off a lot of potential young Conservatives anyway. And now we do have Boris Johnson, who supposedly was going to galvanise kind of, you know, younger Conservative voters again. But I don't think we've really seen a kind of, again, like massive on-the-ground operation. So,
isn't there an issue with funding, though, because of the South Thanet ruling that now...
Yeah, mm-hmm. If you bus damn people it. In that, yeah, that counts as spending in that...
Yeah,
has
in
to
that
be counted on
that
constituency spend.
Can you just do your damn it, Thanet joke again? I thought that was really good, but I don't think we gave enough...
Damn it, Thanet, done.
Moving on.
All week.
Tell your friends. Just try the veal.
I think the thing that most offends me is that in the scene where they go to the school, it's sort of this beautiful representation of inner city comprehensives that is just not representative of how most people experience things. Most people's school play at the end of the year doesn't have a brilliant singer and all the anyway. On one occasion, some kids broke into the staff room and took a shit on the floor. So, that gives you an idea of how... That's how my school experienced it.
That's in the unedited director's cut,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, maybe. But anyway, do you think that John Ashworth's recent difficulties with the leaking have managed to deflect, albeit inadvertently, attention away from Boris Johnson and the NHS issue?
Well, they have in this mini news cycle because everybody is talking about it. And the reason why it's wounding is that despite... And I'm very good friends with Jonathan Ashworth, and I do actually feel for him. You know, he was talking to his so-called friend who's massively betrayed him. But the thing which is hard for Jonathan, he's sort of styling it out, saying, look, it was just bants. But there's a horrible ring of truth to it because that's what people are hearing on the doorstep about Jeremy Corbyn. So I think for... Remember, I mean, our news cycles, we have like 3 mini news cycles a day now. So this news cycle is going to be dominated by Jonathan Ashworth and then we'll move on. But, you know, the thing I just want to say, which is really interesting about the Tory campaign is, I've been out campaigning a lot in some quite kind of tight Labour Tory marginals. And what the Labour candidate is saying is that the Tory candidate is not really doing a huge ground operation.
I've heard that from several Labour candidates.
They're
as
not
well,
doing massive door knocks. They're not kind of they haven't got a kind of an army of people. They're using direct mail and they're using the air war. That's basically what they're doing. But tons and tons of direct mail. Like Labour can't compete with it.
Sure, and I would agree that that's definitely the method that certainly CCHQ knows works. So going back a couple of years to the 2016 Holyrood election, where Ruth Davidson unexpectedly won so many seats and became the official opposition to Nicola Sturgeon, what we were able to do really successfully there was marry the direct mail with the digital targeting. So, you know, convincing voters who wouldn't necessarily be Conservative voters and in fact often hated the Conservatives that the only way to hold Nicola Sturgeon to account if you are a unionist and you support the union was to vote for the Scottish Tories, Ruth Davidson's party. And I think that, you know, that's been refined a bit over the years, and knowing that in a lot of places we just don't have the grassroots infrastructure, that is certainly where they're spending their time and their money, you know, in these last few days and hours.
I feel quite sorry for the Labour activists because we've been trudging around wearing out our shoe leather, literally getting chilblains in our fingers. And somebody was like, God, those bastards don't even need to go out on the doorstep. Just got so much money, they can just send these glossy leaflets. It's so not fair.
Well, we'll see what works.
Because someone was tweeting about this a few days ago. I've really enjoyed actually the new generation of like activists discovering door knocking, canvassing, etc. And like, I've never done it, but obviously a lot of my friends have. And yeah, and I think someone tweeted me like, can we just talk about the amount of men who will open their front door in their underwear or in a towel?
There's a lot of that. Yeah. There is a lot of that.
But wouldn't you do that if you knew that a political canvasser was at the door that you didn't want to talk to?
I'm just take off my clothes and put No, I've had also, I remember this one time I knocked on this door and this guy, he clearly had been looking at some of those websites that Joe had been talking about quite recently. And he opened the door and he was in his pants and he had just like a sheen of sweat all over him. And he was really out of breath. And I was like, oh. And then he was clearly in by himself. And I was like, oh, okay. I'm sorry for interrupting your afternoon activity. I'll vote Labour. Bye.
Look, if you think this is bad, try being a face-to-face researcher knocking on doors. On one occasion, when I was training as a young researcher, having to do this sort of thing, I knocked on the door. Woman just opened the door, completely stark naked, obviously expecting somebody else. Shut the door very, very quickly. Very upset. Very upset.
I think one of my favourite ones is still a Tory friend of mine who, when canvassing once, so he knocked on a door, someone opened, turns out there was a wake happening in that house. And so she's like, shit, shit, shit. And bless her, she thought on her feet, she was like, hi, I'm here from the Liberal Democrats. As they were shutting the door on her. Still very happy with that.
And the thing is, in all Richard Curtis movies, essentially there's a story about a posh British guy who has a relationship with an American woman who is completely out of his league. Love Actually is the definitive example of that. You could take out that entire Chris Marshall element of the plot in Love Actually, and it would make no difference at all. Why is it in there? What's the point? What's the point
but
of that?
Who ends up with the American woman in Love Actually? I thought it's like, he ends up with Martine McCutcheon and then
Colin Frissell.
No.
The Chris Marshall guy.
Who goes off to America. Yeah. Why does he get Colin Frissell?
It's because Americans like to hear the way British men pronounce certain words.
So can bottle. I just say...
Bottle.
Bethany, thank you.
Did you say bottle?
Yes, I can't do an English accent, as you can now.
I thought you said butthole.
Yeah, I thought you said butthole as well.
Yeah,
I had
butthole.
Maybe I did. I'm keeping you guessing.
Like saucy. So it's obviously a Tory thing.
I feel it in my fingers. I feel it in my toes.
We're joined now for our weekly chat with Matt Shaddock from Ladbrokes Politics. Hello, Matt.
Hi, Joe.
So, Matt, tell us, what are the 10 constituencies that have received the most money this election?
Yeah, quite a fascinating top 10 list. Number one's a seat we've talked about before, Ashfield. High profile, local independent running there, quite close between the Tories, Labour. Brexit Party also throwing some resources at that. But we've got the Tories as favourites there now, in common with quite a lot of other seats in that area, which they'll be hoping to take. Number two, Richmond Park. Huge amount of interest in this. Looks like the easiest gain for the Lib Dems on paper, but plenty of people still backing Zach Goldsmith to hold on.
Oh, really? That's interesting.
There's been a really strong, I think, Tory campaign in Richmond. And it may just be the people I follow on social media, but I think every other post I see is Conservative somehow being in Richmond.
And of course, he wasn't expected to win in 2017. Mm. So, well, we'll see. Sorry, carry on.
Yeah, I mean, that'd be a disaster if the Lib Dems, for the Lib Dems if they don't win that. Number three, Islington North, believe it or not. That's mostly a result of a few very large bets on Jeremy Corbyn at very short prices. No real danger of anything happening there. Kensington in at number four with a bullet. Some more polls yesterday from some very reputable organisations which showed the Tories ahead there. And Lib Dems and Labour scrapping out for second place. Hard to know.
But still close between all three, really.
It is quite close, but it's a bit confusing for anyone who wants to cast an anti-Tory vote to know what to do these days. Number five, Finchley and Golders Green. This looked super competitive at the start of the campaign, with the Lib Dems hoping to come from nowhere to win it. But again, Tories seem to be ahead there now, according to the polls. Six, unsurprisingly, I guess, Uxbridge and South Ruislip. Boris Johnson is 1-6 to win this seat. That suggests he's got about an 85% chance of winning it. But obviously, it would be a sensational surprise if Labour managed to win that and oust the Prime Minister. Number seven, Canterbury, which was one of the biggest surprises of 2017. Current betting, absolute coin toss, can't split them. Labour and the Tories, both at 5-6. Number eight, Hartlepool. This is the Brexit Party's number one target, I would say, based on the odds.
And that's Richard Tice.
It is. Peter Mandelson, rest in peace.
Yeah, Richard Tice. The betting suggests Labour are going to hold on here. This has been a Tory target for the last couple of elections. But, yeah, I mean, the odds are that the Brexit Party are going to end up with zero seats. But if they do get one, it might be that one. Number nine, Cities of London and Westminster. Chukka Umunna for the Lib Dems trying to win this from the Tories. Again, there has been some good polling of the seats, and it does look like the Tories are ahead there, but Labour still in with a shout too. And number 10 of 10, St Albans, which is, I would guess, Lib Dems' number two target for a gain.
Again, Remain-leaning constituency.
Yeah, exactly. Tory-held, Remain-leaning. I hear they're chucking huge amounts of resources at this. The Lib Dems would be... It's going to be a very bad night if they don't win St Albans and Richmond Park. And the Lib Dems are indeed favourites. I think they're about 2-1 at the moment. 2-1 on at the moment.
Great. And what about the overall result? Where does the betting stand on that? And how has that changed in light of the events that we've seen over the last few days?
Yeah, frantic 48 hours of campaigning. I mean, there was quite a big change yesterday. I mean, the probability of a hung parliament went up from about 20% to 25% on Monday. And that's the only thing I can really put that down to was the news story about Boris Johnson stealing a journalist's phone and not looking at a picture of a child in a hospital, because the polls didn't seem to change very much. Now, that seems like an enormous overreaction to me. Perhaps it will be... do a small bit of harm to the Tories, but that's a big jump in the betting market. So anyway, right now, Tory majority 3-1 on, so about a 75% chance that Boris Johnson will get over that 325-seat target.
And I guess last thing, so we've been asking all our guests for the past 6 weeks what they're going to be doing on election night. So it feels only fair that we should ask you as well. So Matt, what will you be doing on election night?
I'll be sat in the Ladbrokes trading department adjusting the prices probably until the early hours of the morning or whenever we think a result's certain. But yeah, I mean, there's actually a huge amount of betting activity goes on after the polls have closed, and obviously things are likely to change quite a bit when we get the exit poll. But yeah, you'll be able to bet on, over a majority and what the size of that majority will be. It will kind of depend on what the exit poll says. But I can guarantee there'll be a lot of lively betting markets going on, perhaps fuelled by people coming home from Christmas parties. But remember, don't drink and bet.
Thank you. Thank you, Matt, for that festive public service announcement. Thanks, Matt. We'll speak to you soon.
Cheers, Joe.
I feel it in my fingers.
In my fingers.
I feel it in my toes.
Feel it in my toes. love is all a oh, fuck, wank, bugger, shitting, ass, head and hole. Start again.
And now it's time for our big election questions. So, five of them. We'll start with the first one. Bethany Aisha, what will you be doing during the rest of the campaign?
At my work Christmas party, which is taking place on the Thursday evening.
Is it still going ahead?
It is going ahead because we don't just do public affairs. In fact, I don't even do public affairs where I work. But yeah, we're having our big annual Christmas party.
Presumably there must be a lot of companies that are in the same boat.
I think
because
so.
Thursday night is a good night for a corporate.
And you know, once that ends at midnight, going on to some election night parties, and just really, you know, going on through till the next morning.
Strong.
I'm doing a lot of writing and broadcasting between now and then. I don't think I'm going to do that much more.
Will you will you be on LBC's election night?
I will. I'm doing BBC, then ITN, then LBC, then Good Morning Britain. Yeah. It's going to be quite a long night.
I'm doing Channel 4.
Oh, exciting.
I am. So I just wanted to say it.
And I'm on LBC all night.
Look at us.
I'm feeling very left out.
You'll have the most fun, though.
Probably true.
No. I'm going on Channel 4 until 1 a.m. and then I'll get drunk.
It's Why don't you get drunk before you go on Channel 4?
Maybe just a little bit tipsy.
None of you will ever be media advisors.
I have been amused. Do not drink, Marie, before you go on.
Fine.
Question two. What will you be doing during the election day itself?
I will be writing stuff and I'm also going to stock up on my sleep because I'm going to be up all night.
Ooh, okay, talk me through.
And voting. And voting, of course.
Do you not vote by post?
No.
I
love going into a small sort of, you know, community centre and getting my pencil. I feel like it's a really nice thing to
do. Also seeing if there's any dogs there.
I don't like dogs.
Oh,
I like...
Okay.
I'm not a dog person. I'm not an animal person.
I'm with you. Complete waste of time.
Totally
What's the
agree.
Point? Cannot operate even basic machinery. No good for conversations. And cannot grow up to pay your cost of living. So.
Very needy. No, yeah, I'm just not into that kind of thing.
Anyway, I'm just going to have to move swiftly on. Isha, talk me through your nap timing, because I'm generally interested in this. Because I'm personally thinking 4:30 p.m. until 6 p.m.
That's what I'm doing. I think I'm going to have a...
Oh, but that's my thing, because last time I thought I'd be clever and go to sleep at 3 and then sleep until whenever I could. And then I woke up fresh as a daisy at 3:45 and I was like, well. So I feel like, you know, the key is not to start too early in case you wake up.
So I'm going to actually, because I have to get up so early to be in the Evening Standard for so early, I'm normally so exhausted by the time I finish work, I will have no problem getting to sleep. So I think I'm going to go have my disco nap quite early. I think I'm going to maybe like do sort of 2 till 6 or something.
Oh. So you think 4 hours? I think 3 to 4 hours is the good.
Definitely.
Is the best time. There's something about your sleep cycles working on 45-minute rotations. So 3 hours, 45 minutes is supposedly, supposedly the optimal length of time.
I don't have time for that. I'm a busy woman. I'll only sleep for 2 hours in the middle of the day.
Yeah, but you then
You're young.
Exactly.
I'm
you're
so old now. I'll probably falling asleep like on air, basically, dribbling.
We'll both be on LBC asleep for 15 minutes at a time.
I'm coming to LBC at 5 o'clock in the morning. By that point, I'll be like...
I love the idea of you two having to poke each other in the ribs every 2 minutes to wake each other up.
I went on Good Morning Britain either in 2015 or 2017 after having been up all night. I can't remember even which one it was. And the makeup lady said... So I walked in and I was in the chair for the longest I've ever been there.
I remember a guy at the BBC. He went to me. Did you ever consider washing your hair?
Oh, ouch!
It's like ouch, burn, baby, burn.
It's tough, harsh but fair. Everybody else gets to nap on election day. I'll be in the office as ever from about 8 in the morning. And then, working and then, as previously mentioned, going on to my Christmas party. So, yeah, it'll be great.
Okay, so
Say you have a meeting with me, with journalist Maria DeCon.
Yeah.
And then just, I don't know, like, sleep on my couch if you want.
Yeah,
I'll
fair.
Help.
Okay, I'm in.
Question three then. What will you be doing during election night? We've already covered this
a bit. We've covered that. Drinking a lot. I think. Dancing.
Oh, what alcohols are we thinking? Because I've been trying to think of what I will be carrying because I'll be going to different election parties. Because I'm thinking whiskey and Coke. Because I think the sugar keeps you up as well.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
if you make them, you can make them sort of like quite light or quite strong depending on how stuff is going.
So hang on, you're drinking,
I'll
Bethany.
Be drinking.
You're doing media. And then you're doing media, then drinking.
Yes, I am. And I'm also filing at some point, but it's fine. It's not stuff that requires me to be entirely sober.
As a media advisor, what do you think is better, writing copy when drunk or going on TV when drunk?
Writing copy is
writing
better.
Copy is fine. But actually, you know, your Evening Standard diary, so you'll know this, but generally the best kill I have as a result of that, doing that job a few years ago, is that I once, actually, Labour Conference 2015, I filed the lead story at 4 a.m. with only one eye open, because when both my eyes were open, I couldn't see my screen because it kept moving. So I filed it in bed at 4 a.m. with one eye open. And it got in the paper without any edits the next day. That, so, Jenny, is... I think if you've been a diarist, you can get as drunk as you want and you'll basically be able to file
basically,
copy.
Basically, doing the diary prepares you for everything in life from a journalistic point of view, literally. We were doing that at party... I mean, obviously, this party conferences was my first time on the diary and there was so much filing going on at, like, 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning. It was not... It's like, how has this even happened? But, yeah, it's gold.
For me, the fat shaming of Martin McCutcheon, I think, is probably the most egregious element. Because it's sort of low levels, that you might even forget it if you haven't seen the film film recently.
No, but it's the thing as well, of like, and obviously it would still be bad if she were bigger, but she's like a size 10. So it's where they keep talking about her massive thighs. It's like, she's a very thin woman.
Yeah, it's just not acceptable.
It was a different time, but also I agree, not acceptable.
But was it a different time? You see, there's coercion, there's fat shaming, there's Me Too moments.
It's total Me Too. Yeah. Total Me Too. But also, everyone has such a nice house. That's the other thing that really annoys me about.
Next to a really nice school.
Yeah, that's... and they can get their kids into their school of choice. I mean, that's the thing I hate the most about these Richard Curtis films. They're such a deception about what life in London is like.
You see, I don't mind that so much.
Do you live in a really nice house?
I live in a really nice house.
Okay, right. Yeah. Like zone 17.
There isn't a zone 17. It doesn't go past 12.
And a half.
He's in the half.
Question 4 then. Very simple. What do you think will happen?
I think there'll be a 15 to 20-ish seat majority for the Conservative Party. I think it'll be, you know, a working majority, but it's not going to be a landslide.
I agree with that. I think it's going to be a slim Tory majority.
I'd say slightly slimmer Tory majority, but yeah, basically same. Like maybe a Tory majority of like 4.
Question 5. Who do you think is going to be the next Prime Minister?
Who the fuck knows?
Well, what would be your guess?
Well, let's say Rebecca Long Bailey.
Oh.
I have no idea, but the person who I would like to see take over would be Keir Starmer.
Do you think that's... as a serious question, do you think that's a realistic...
No, not... option? But if you're saying Prime Minister, I think the next leader of the Labour Party will probably be somebody like Rebecca Long Bailey. But whether that will be the next Labour Prime Minister is another question. I think we may need to go through some more ritual humiliation and defeat before we get our next Labour Prime Minister. And at that point, I do hope maybe Keir Starmer down the track.
Can I have a guess?
Sure. Yes, you may.
Thank you. Angela Rayner. Thank you.
I just don't know either. I think, yeah, maybe Keir Starmer or Angela Rayner. But, yeah, who knows? And lastly then, Christmas carols. What do you think the nation's favourite Christmas carol is?
Oh, Come All Ye Faithful.
Well, as Roy Walker would say, it's good, but it's not right.
God rest you, merry gentlemen. No?
that is on the list, but that's a long way down.
Once in Royal David City.
That's a long way down. Once in Royal David City. Once in Royal David City is 4th.
Okay. I do love that one.
God rest ye,
merry gentlemen.
That's a long way down. Only
2%
of people said that. Silent Night. That's the right answer. Okay. Marie, what would you have...
I was about to say, I do not know any carols, so I'm actually very happy for once someone answered before I got my answer in.
I'm not sure...
I was going to ask if We Wish You a Merry Christmas technically counts as a carol. So, yeah.
Christmas song, not a carol.
Yeah. Don't even know if I know how God Rest You Merry Gentlemen
goes. I'm not singing,
goes.
Just to be clear.
It's quite like... It's not super upbeat, is it? It's quite sort of...
No. It's a little bit in a minor key.
Yes, yeah.
I think you recognize it
as well.
It's
quite
like hard to say.
I know that.
Oh, yes, it is. That is on here, but that's only 2%. Another mistake in love, actually. Yeah. Aisha and Bethany... Thank you very much. Merry Christmas to you both.
Thank you
for coming in.
Thank you. Thanks.
Please remember to like, subscribe, review, all these different things that help people hear about us. And do tell all of your friends and many of the people that you don't know, even if you haven't enjoyed the podcast. This is a Poddo podcast produced by Nick Hilton, and our theme tune is by Joe Button.
For more details, go to podopods.com, and for sales and advertising, email nick@podopods.com.
And yes, that's spelled podotpods.com.